Welcome to Longevity. I'm your host, Natalie Nittam. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology and ancestral health practices to personalized interventions and a very special interest of mine, peptides and bioregulators. Enjoy the show. This episode is brought to you by Primadine, Nature's Marvels Bioregulators, and O3 Oracle from Wizard Sciences, each one with special offers just for you. See the show notes below for details. And now let's dive into the show. There's a process your body relies on to stay resilient as you age. If you listen to this show often, you've heard about it many times. As we get older, the body's ability to recycle damaged or inefficient cellular parts slows down. That process is called autophagy. And one way I support it daily is with Primadine. It's a food-derived spermidine supplement that gently signals your cells to turn their cleanup and renewal systems back on. I take it as part of my bedtime routine. No fasting required. Plus, it's amazing for sleep. Primadine isn't synthetic spermidine. It's derived from concentrated Japanese wheat germ and includes naturally occurring cofactors, plus a prebiotic that supports your body's own spermidine production. It's rigorously tested, clean, and designed for long-term use. And for the gluten-free folks out there, they have a gluten-free Primadine available for you too. Now, if you want to support resilience from the inside out, head on over to oxfordhealthspan.com/bionat20 and use code bionat20 at checkout. Discount is valid on one-time purchases only. If you're a regular listener of this podcast, bioregulators are not news to you. If you're new to the podcast, this may be a new concept, and I'm telling you now, this is one of the craziest, most cutting-edge concepts that's been around for decades that so few people know about, and that concept are bioregulators. Think of bioregulators as seasonal upgrades for your body, not a fix, not a hack, just foundational support. As the weather cools and routines change, your internal systems have to adapt. And we know that when they don't adapt smoothly, which they often don't do as we age, we end up feeling sluggish, foggy, or just a little off, even if you're doing all the right things. Now, this is why I love Nature's Marvels natural bioregulators. These are organ-specific peptide complexes that support your body's own regulatory systems in a rejuvenative way. And there's decades of research behind these. Now, this time of year, I'm especially fond of the liver bioregulator, a gentle way to support the liver's detox pathways and metabolic flow at a time when the liver is working overtime from the holiday goodies, delicious drinks, and stresses of the season. Bioregulators as a whole improve communication at the organ level, helping the body to do what it knows how to do, just like when you were younger and more efficiently. Now, pro tip, you'll want to stack that liver bioregulator with the pancreas bioregulator and the stomach bioregulator for a full digestive support and renewal stack. I would do 2 capsules a day of each for 30 days. Now, head on over to profound-health.com. Use code NAT15 for 15% off your first order. Do it for a month. Let me know how you feel. Hey, Aaron Ryan. Welcome back. We're here again.
Here we are.
So for those of you who bounced through the intro, I'm here with my producer, Aaron Ryan, the wonderful and talented Aaron Ryan. And we are doing part two of the follow-up questions. We could probably do a 10-part series on this, but we're not going to do that because people who, you know, aren't so big on the bioregulators, plus I have some guests coming up in the bioregulator space that is really, really exciting.
Okay.
But we decided to do a part two to this from the Bill Lawrence episode that we released in December. That now on YouTube, Aaron, I think we're sneaking up on 200,000 downloads of that episode.
Yeah, so it's making moves for sure.
It's making moves. Mm-hmm. It really hit a nerve. So, of course, an episode with that many downloads is going to generate a ton of questions. Mm-hmm. So we picked some out and Erin's here to help me so that I don't just sit here and chatter the whole time.
I'll keep you guided.
By myself. So Erin, fire away. What's our first question?
Okay. So I just wanted to mention that when we got all of our questions together, like I said last time, we put them into different themes. And so not for any specific reason, but these themes ended up being a little heavier, a little deeper questions from what we did last time. Last time is about how bioregulators are or how our body uses them. Is it in food? Can you get it from food? All these kind of lighter topics. These are deeper questions. And just as a reminder up front, neither of us are doctors. Nothing here is any kind of prescriptive, especially because people have a lot of questions around the topic of cancer and menopause and things that are very, you know, very serious from a health standpoint. So we'll go through the questions and don't expect for, you know, for Nat to give you a prescription on any of this, because that's not what this is for. It's just simply, she knows a hell of a lot about bioregulators and can guide us in the right way. So let's hit the hard topics first. So we had a lot of questions about cancer and peptides and bioregulators. I'll just start with the first. So could telomere lengthening peptides accelerate cancer? That's a question that many people have.
Powerful question. And that's a really good question. The peptide we're really honing in on here is the pineal gland bioregulator peptide, which is known as epitalon, which is the synthetic version, endolutin, which is the natural bioregulator, and epithalamin, which is the injectable natural that Cavinson used in his studies when he did the old people studies.
Okay.
So it's a great question that doesn't have a very clear answer. Mm-hmm. I would say that if you read all of the literature that Cavinson produced, there is nothing in there that indicates that it does drive cancer. He didn't report. Now, I will say this. He didn't report that in the elderly studies there was any increase in cancer. If anything, there were dramatic reductions in mortality, particularly when he paired the pineal gland bioregulator with the thymus gland bioregulator. Having said that, in active cases of cancer, I would never recommend that somebody use any bioregulator. There's too much that we don't know, right? So there's no evidence currently that the pineal gland bioregulator would cause cancer. If anything, there was an interesting, now this is a mouse study, but there was a really cool mouse study that Cavinson did looking at epitalon, which is the synthetic version of the pineal gland bioregulator. And they also looked at Vilon, V-I-L-O-N, which if you try to type it into your computer, will automatically get autocorrected to violin. So if you see that, I'm just going to tell you. I've gone back and forth like five times. Anyway, he looked at those two bioregulators and he tested them on transgenic mice that were predisposed or had a genetic predisposition for HER2 mammary tumors, genetic tumors. And with both of the bioregulators, actually Vilon, or I call it Vilon because I'm French. Vilon was even more effective than epitalon, but in both cases, it reduced the incidence of mammary gland tumors and the size if they even got them.
Okay.
Having said that, we don't have cute little whiskers and tails and furry ears.
Yeah.
So that there was, to my knowledge, there's been no follow-up human study done to follow that up. So we know it works for, it seems to help in mice. We don't know if it helps in humans. So the short answer to the question, could telomere lengthening peptides accelerate cancer, is there's no evidence to date that says it does, but if somebody has an active case of cancer, I sure wouldn't take a chance on that.
Yeah.
Because we just don't have the research that tells us that it doesn't.
Yeah.
And
and that's even a tricky thing to even research, like who knows what kind of cancer and how far along and like who, 100%. I don't know that any of those studies will ever even be done just because of,
Well, I mean, they'll do the studies, you know, if those studies ever happen, it'll be in vitro to start, then it'll be ex vivo where they'll take the cells and put them in, you know, human cells. But it would be pretty tricky to do a human trial on this. But I just think that in the absence of clarity, we need to be cautious.
Okay.
The two C's, right? Yep. Clarity, caution. So you need to be conservative.
And cancer. You should be cautious.
The four C's, right? Clarity, caution, conservative, and cancer.
Yeah.
So you want to be, When it comes to peptides and cancer, you want to be working with a physician slash practitioner who has experience in those two arenas, yeah, or will work with your oncology team in this arena. Like, the stakes are too high, folks. Yeah. You know, biohacking, as it were, it has a connotation of being a bit of a cowboy. Ooh, yeah. Another C. And being a cowboy is awesome, mm-hmm, in many, many ways. But I would say that even people who are pushing the edges of alternative health or looking for solutions outside of conventional medicine, it needs to be balanced out with, yeah, that clarity, yeah, that and knowledge, right? Because, mm-hmm, there's too much at play here.
We're happy and grateful for the cowboys because we find out more about how some of these things work. But as you said, especially when it comes to cancer, you got to have a team. The next question, and it's kind of just, you know, tails on from the last question, is if cancer cells rely on telomerase, is this dangerous?
Again, we don't know, right? So telomerase is the enzyme that restores and maintains the length of telomeres on the ends of your DNA, which, mm-hmm, is what allows the DNA, the cells, to replicate. And of course, we know that cancer cells have this superpower of, mm-hmm, being able to replicate. There's a Hayflick limit, mm-hmm, to how many times a cell can replicate. And what we want, of course, in healthy cells is we want to help them to be able to replicate healthily, mm-hmm, over and over. So if cancer cells can hijack that ability so that they can replicate more, mm-hmm, heck yeah, like we want to, it can be dangerous. So it, yeah, goes back to what we were just saying a minute ago. If someone has active cancer, we would want to stay away from it.
Should people with cancer avoid bioregulators? I mean, that's your...
If it's active. Yeah. I think that if it's... Look, I mean, you know what, guys? I haven't really talked about this publicly yet. Like, I've gone through a pretty intense health journey over the last... since the beginning of this year, which I will eventually share with you. And I haven't used bioregulators at all. You know, my immune system went offline and went kind of haywire off to the side. And some people may have said, well, why didn't you just take the immune bioregulator? Well, sometimes when your system, your body gets so far out of balance, you've got to manage what's happening before you can bring any of these compounds into play.
Yeah.
So there's a time and a place for bioregulators, and they can be helpful therapeutically at times. Mm-hmm. But I would say when it comes to cancer, again, you've got to be working with someone who's got experience in this area and who's, mm-hmm, willing to work with your team.
Okay. And this one's more specific, and, you know, maybe some of these are just going to be a duplicate answer. Are there peptides supportive in breast cancer recovery? And it sounds like what you're saying is, look, if there is a person out there, a doctor out there who works very closely for 30 years with breast cancer patients and maybe has some experience anecdotally with peptides, maybe, I think that's what you're saying.
Well, there's actually, so that's an interesting one, because there's a book called the Bioregulator Revolution. And, mm-hmm, in that book, there is a small section that talks about, I'm pretty sure it's breast cancer recovery, but, mm, what it is there's the immune bioregulators. Mm-hmm. So the thymus gland bioregulator and VILON, mm-hmm, that VILON, your violin bioregulator. There is some literature that says that they've been used post radiation and chemotherapy. So what do those things do? So once the person is cleared and they've had radiation and chemotherapy, why do people then end up very often developing cancers later down the road? Is because of the damage that was done to the immune system, in part. Right. Yeah. Also, sometimes there's some cancer cells that may have evaded the system, like the treatment, whatever the case may be. But so there is some evidence, and there is some. So we're going to go back, always, mm-hmm, work with your practitioner. Mm-hmm. But there is, it's worth researching and looking into maybe tapping into those immune bioregulators after recovery to try and help the immune system to kind of recover and come back online in a balanced way.
Okay. Yeah, that's
so
a good.
There's some evidence there.
That's a good thing to know. And what was the name of that book? And do you remember who wrote it?
Yeah. So it's called the hang on. I have it right here. For those of you on YouTube, you're going to get to see it.
Where'd it go? Oh, here it is. I'm going to show you my old copy with all the things in it.
It's called The Peptide Bioregulator Revolution. It's very Russian cover.
Okay. And who did it?
The author, who actually is going to be a guest on this podcast in the next couple of months, is Marios Kyriazis.
Oh, yes.
MD. You can find this book. It's a great little primer, if you will, on bioregulators. And you can find this on the website, on the Profound Health website.
Oh, okay, cool.
We'll put the link in the show notes, which is where I get a lot of my natural bioregulators from. So,
okay.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Next question is, could bioregulators help immune surveillance?
Yes. I mean, theoretically, yes. Mm-hmm. The immune bioregulator, so that's the thymus gland bioregulator, mm-hmm. along with the pineal gland bioregulator, right? Because pineal gland kind of has this overarching effect on the endocrine and immune systems. Theoretically, yes. If you're bringing the immune system back into balance, there's also a bone marrow bioregulator. So if we address these systems and help to bring them back into homeostasis, theoretically, it should help with immune surveillance over time.
And if people are, we're going to talk about sourcing later, but if people are looking at different bioregulators, is it just called thymus?
That's a great question. It depends where you buy them. Okay. So definitely Profound Health has done the work of saying, you know what? The bioregulator nomenclature it's a little bit like walking into IKEA and reading those labels. Like it's crazy.
Okay.
And every bioregulator has two or three different names, sometimes four, depending on whether it's synthetic or natural or what have you.
Yeah.
So what they've done is they've gotten rid of that whole nonsense and said their boxes, the brand is called Nature's Marvels. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the box says pineal gland bioregulator or immune thymus bioregulator. So they've kind of just made it really easy for people. You don't have to remember kilo heart and stamacort and all of these different crazy names.
Okay. Because I did, when I was combing through all the questions, I did see a few people say that they were maybe on the hunt for bioregulators and should they just look for quote unquote thymus gland, or is there another name for it?
You know what we can do in the show notes actually, or is maybe we have a, leave it with us folks, but we have a list of the different bioregulators with the name, all the different names that they have.
Okay.
We can maybe create a link for people to try and download that. So let's see if we can figure something out with that.
Okay. And if we don't do it in the time of these show notes, we'll get that out and talk about it. And then we'll link it back on the show notes, but we could get to it before then. We'll try.
We'll do our best.
Speaking from the producer side, I'm like, well, I'll try to get that done. When is it inappropriate to use them?
I would say it's inappropriate to use them when you're in a health crisis.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. If you're in a health crisis and you're thinking, oh, I'm just going to throw bioregulators into this blindly and hope that it fixes it. Definitely. I've seen them be helpful when people are trying to address a thyroid issue sometimes even with hormones, they can be helpful. They can be helpful as part of the picture. But if you're in a major health crisis, like you're going to the hospital or you're just incredibly ill, that's not the time to bring them in. Like you've got to, you know, like if there's a forest fire on, you're going to want to get a hold of, you're going to want to at least get it down to under control before you start thinking about bioregulators.
Okay. All right. So we're going to shift over to the theme of the questions was menopause and ovarian aging.
Good questions.
Yeah. So the first question is, are there studies on peptides delaying menopause?
I'm not sure that there's studies, but there's definitely a lot of people working on this.
Okay.
And you know, again, are we talking peptides or bioregulators? I think we're talking bioregulators right now. Mm-hmm. So I have definitely spoken to a number of practitioners and even individuals who've used the ovarian, adrenal, thyroid, and central nervous system bioregulators through perimenopause, and they don't use them all the time, but kind of in cycles, and have felt that it's helped to bring some balance back into their system. Nice. So there are practitioners that are working with fertility patients that swear up, down, and sideways that they've been able to enhance fertility and also working with the men as well, right? So not just the woman, but there's a bioregulator for the testes. Yeah. So it doesn't mean that the bioregulators by themselves are necessarily going to do all the work, but incorporated in with all the other work that's being done in that area, it seems that they can be, they can assist. Okay. They can really be helpful. And as we're going through menopause, if we can help to bring some balance back to the ovaries and the, you know, and that whole HPA system, right? The adrenals, HTA and the pituitary, right? Mm-hmm. All of these systems, if we can help to restore balance to them while we're doing all the other things, I don't know that it can delay menopause, but it can definitely make the transition much easier.
Yeah. They seem to be a good support friend for a lot of what we discuss. if someone's listening to this and is trying to find one of those practitioners, are you comfortable giving like a couple of examples of names, or maybe we'll mention some people in the show notes?
Maybe we'll mention some people in the show notes. Okay. Let me think back on who it was I was talking to. There was definitely a couple of them.
Well, also like some people just, they're very busy and they don't, you know, you have a very large podcast and to start sending a ton of people to any one doctor is like, we have to warn them first before we talk about.
Yeah, definitely. You know, one of the practitioners who works a lot with bioregulator, there's a couple of them. One is Dr. Gus Vickery, who I've had on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not necessarily in the fertility space, but he definitely incorporates bioregulators in his work. Mm-hmm. Another one is Dr. Grace Liu. She's the gut goddess. So people really associate her with gut health, but she did a deep, deep, deep dive into peptides and bioregulators. And so she incorporates them in her practice quite a lot. So those are two people who definitely work extensively with bioregulators.
Yeah. And even if they're not taking on new patients, you can look at what they're doing in their practice. A lot of these practitioners have so much helpful information and content on their websites nowadays that it's not just like make an appointment. You can actually kind of find out what they're up to and what they're interested in. Okay. The next one is, could pituitary rejuvenation affect ovarian aging?
Probably indirectly to a point, but I think ovarian aging gets driven by, you know, it gets driven by so many different factors. I mean, this is nowhere near my area of expertise. Sure. So I'm not sure that I can give a really full answer here. But I think that if we're working through perimenopause on supporting the ovaries, you know, using the pineal gland bioregulator, the ovarian bioregulator, and even bringing the adrenals and thyroid into the mix, because all of these things affect these hormones, right? And the production of hormones and stress and all of these different aspects. I don't know that they're necessarily going to delay the aging of ovaries, but I think it's going, what they're going to do is they're going to support the ovaries through this transition. Again, you'd have to have a study that measures, you know, and there are people working on this. There was a guy that I had on the podcast a couple of years ago. His first name is Zach. I can't remember his last name right now, but he's working heavily on delaying ovarian aging. And they're looking at mitochondria in ovaries because, of course, your ovaries are very, very dense in mitochondria. It's one of the densest places because it's so energy intensive making babies and stuff. And I think what they were doing is, I think, as a matter of fact, there, they were maybe using a peptide called MOTC that was helping on the ovarian side, but they were assessing ovarian aging and they had protocols in place and maybe with even stem cells where they were delaying menopause. They were extending, they are extending ovarian lifespan, health span, if you will. He's this great giant Greek guy with like big hair and very, very, very dynamic individual. He's a great speaker, actually.
Episode 274 for anyone who wants to go back and listen to that. The title is Reversing Menopause for Peak Health with Stem Cell Therapies and Lifestyle Habits. But I'm sure he talks a little bit about what you're discussing.
Well, and I think it was mostly with stem cells. It may not even have been MOTC, but you know, I introduced him to Dr. Anna Kabeka, the girlfriend doctor who we were talking about before the podcast. And the two of them, I introduced them and it was like, phew, it was like this crazy magnet. And that was the end of the two of them for anybody else at the conference for the rest of the night. They were so deep in conversation because she, of course, as an OBGYN, a functional OBGYN, has done a lot of work in this area as well. And so I basically, by introducing them, lost them both.
And bye-bye.
So, by the time I left, they were like talking about collaborating and working together. It was amazing.
Yeah. Actually. Then the next day they're like, where were you? You're like, right there.
I was right there. I just became invisible all of a sudden. You know, like, I think that's one of the coolest things about doing what I do is sometimes because you get insight into all these different people and what they do. And then when you can bring people together who, and I'm literally ran over to Zach and said, you have got to meet Anna Kabeka, Dr. Anna Kabeka. And he was like, why? And I'm like, you'll see. And within 10 seconds, he's like, oh, right. Okay.
That's so cool. So for the next two questions, I mean, maybe this is maybe a question for one of them. I don't know. Is ovarian longevity measurable?
Well, it is. You know, if you have a woman who's 58 years old and didn't go through menopause and is still cycling and is still, you know, has all the vibrancy of a premenopausal woman, then you've essentially done that.
Yeah. You've found out that she's very lucky genetically.
Yeah. What I'm saying is if you've done it therapeutically, then, you know, so is it measurable in that sense? Do they have other metrics that they use? I can't really remember. Like, folks, you should definitely check out the, if this is something that interests you, definitely check out that episode. I should actually reach out to Zach and see what he's up to these days.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have him back on and see, because he was pretty excited about his work. It was pretty exciting.
Episode 2-something would have been a while ago.
Yeah, you said 270-something. Yeah. So that would have been, I think it would have been 2024.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the last question under that theme is any clinical outcomes in women? And I don't know how much.
Yeah. So again, like I think, well, I've spoken to clinicians who absolutely would say that they've been able to materially impact, favorably impact fertility, using bioregulators in women as part of their protocols. Mm-hmm. And then you've got guys like Zach who are using stem cells directly into ovaries, who also has affected fertility and has delayed the onset of menopause. Mm. So the short answer is there are clinical outcomes. Are there massive clinical double-blind studies showing this?
Yeah.
No, it's still very anecdotal. It's still very much based on individual work by different people. There are some good tools in longevity that are powerful, but quite impractical for daily life. Ozone therapy is one of these. The research is compelling, but most people aren't going to clinics multiple times a week or setting up equipment at home. And honestly, you shouldn't need to. That's why I was so curious when Wizard Sciences launched Oracle. It's their first ozonated oil in a capsule designed to be used daily. No machines, no appointments. Just a simple addition to a routine that's already working. What makes it so interesting is its delivery. Oracle uses an acid-protected capsule, so the ozonated oil reaches the small intestine intact. That matters because ozone doesn't work like a typical antioxidant. It acts as a signal, encouraging your body to increase its own antioxidant production, support immune balance, and improve cellular communication. And because it's delivered through the gut, you're supporting the system where immunity, detoxification, and energy regulation all begin. If you're looking for a smarter, more practical way to support resilience at the cellular level, you can learn more about Oracle at wizardsciences.com and make sure to use code NAT15 for 15% off your purchase.
Well, let's move into our next section, which was a grab bag, because I could no longer get themes out of certain ones, but I thought they were good questions. The first one was, how do GLP-1s affect absorption of bioregulators since it slows digestion?
It's a good question. So what we're talking about here are the natural bioregulators that you would take in capsules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so whereas, right, so the synthetic ones sometimes are delivered as an oral spray, or they can be, you know, there's injectables, of course. But for the oral bioregulators, I would say, I mean, that's a great question. I don't know anybody that's done a study on it for sure. I don't think it would be a material problem. Because you're, you know, there, you've got a very tiny amino acid sequence that has transporters that get it from the stomach across the lumen into the bloodstream. I mean, whether it gets there in 20 minutes, half an hour, or an hour doesn't actually make that much of a difference.
Okay.
So I don't think it'll affect the efficacy of the bioregulator. It'll, because we're not taking a bioregulator and expecting to feel something in 20 minutes. It's not like, you know, let's say you were delivering insulin orally, which you wouldn't, but let's say you did and you needed that insulin to kick in before you had a blood sugar event.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to delay the delivery of that insulin. Right. With a bioregulator, it's not going to create a problem.
Okay. The next question came from a few different questions from different age groups. So I just threw in all the age groups. And there may only be one answer to this. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, and not to say that it would be any kind of protocol, but just some, maybe your thoughts on what you do for support. But the question is what to do for preventative support for someone in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. So I think just a global question of like, what part of your life is it a good idea to maybe start some supportive bioregulators? And I mean, for women, we kind of just talked about what part of your life it might be interesting to start certain bioregulators. Yeah. But I think that's the overall questions that we're getting is like people wanting to, in not to solve a problem, but to prevent problems in the most positive way
Yeah, that's a really good question. So from a prevention, so we're putting the therapeutics aside, right? Mm-hmm. So from a, you know, like the analogy that I use a lot around bioregulators is the tire analogy. So you've got tires on your car. And when you first get those tires, they've got the fuzzy little things on them. The treads are super deep. They're in beautiful, great shape. Mm-hmm. And as you drive on those tires over the years, the tread will wear down. You lose the fuzzies, all the things. What the bioregulator is bringing to the table from a preventative support is it's restoring the tread on the tires. Now, it's not restoring the tread on the tires back to when they were new, but it's hopefully restoring the tread on the tires so that they keep going longer and still give you traction. So depending on your age is might dictate how often you might tap into the bioregulators. So as a 40-year-old, you don't, you know, your tread's still pretty good. You're, you're still feeling great. Now you may pay attention to certain aspects, right? So if you're a woman going through menopause, that kind of stuff, you may kind of highlight certain bioregulators a little bit more. But I would say in your 40s, if you're in really good health and things are great, you might do, you might run like the epitalon and the thymus and the blood vessel, those three, the pineal gland, blood vessel and thymus. You might do a 30-day hit of the oral ones, maybe once or twice a year.
Okay.
Right? Now, if you had the budget and the bandwidth and the wherewithal, you might run through. So there's 21 bioregulators. There would be a couple that wouldn't apply to you because you don't have testes. So you probably wouldn't use that one. And for men, you wouldn't use the ovarian. But you could say, I mean, if you had the budget and the wherewithal, you might do a 30-day round of that. So if there's 21, let's say there's 20 divided by, if you did three at a time, that would be 7 months. That would be a lot. Right.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't necessarily need to do 30 days. You might do 10 days a month. You might do 30 days of that big anti-aging stack. And then you might do 10 days a month of the other ones. And you could cycle through all like three different, you could do three at a time.
Okay.
Kind of thing. In your 50s, definitely you'd move into the 50s and 60s, probably twice a year.
Okay.
By the time you're in your 60s, that kind of longevity stack, you might run that three times. So go every 4 months. And as you age, you might increase the frequency a little bit. But you know, the study that Cavinson did, his old people study, they were given the pineal gland and the thymus gland bioregulators. I think they only did a couple of rounds a year for 2 years. They didn't use them all year long. Now, he was using a much more potent form of the bioregulators than we have access to. Right? So he was using these animal extracts that could be injected intramuscularly. You couldn't get your hands on that right now. So it was a very, it was kind of like the strongest medicine form, if you will, of those bioregulators. So I, you know, in thinking about it, and actually this will be a question for one of the bioregulator experts I have coming up. And these are people, one of them is a Russian woman who actually was the wife of Cavinson and who herself is a medical doctor and researcher and did a lot of this work. And that will be, you know, in the absence of being able to access those, would we do maybe a longer cycle of the natural bioregulators instead, but still only use it twice a year? So these are all questions that need to be answered. But definitely, as we get older, you could argue that we would, there's a use case scenario for running them a little more frequently and doing longer runs maybe than when we're younger. And when you're younger, you just, you're just providing like a little reminder. Right. So a 10-day cycle might be enough, especially in the absence of any issues.
That's a good rule of thumb. Let's see. The next question is, and I don't know if people like to say it, epitalon or epitalon. I don't know. Is epitalon safe long-term for long-term use?
So again, that's another good question. And one of the reasons why I think it's a good question, because in the, on the one hand, I've seen a number of practitioners talk about using Epitalon every single day, all the time, without stop. I don't think there's any use case for that. I don't think there's any evidence that says that the, when Cavinson was running all his studies, he never talked about doing that. And so I don't know I don't know that there's any research that would give us an indication here.
Yeah.
But I don't know that there's any need either.
Okay.
Like, you know, like think about the way that the body responds better to pulses than it does yeah. to constant stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and this is my personal opinion. Like Aaron said at the beginning, I'm not a doctor. I'm not the researcher here, but from what I know of the way the human body works, I don't think it's A, necessary, and B, I don't know if it's safe. So why would
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Like use it for a while and then give it a break. Step away. Let
yeah.
your body do its thing. Like let the body reset and then go back to it maybe in 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months, depending on where you're at.
Okay. And the last question under our grab bag is who should avoid telomere peptides?
Yeah. So we kind of covered that earlier.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, the telomere lengthening peptides is going to be for primarily you're going to want to avoid them when you're in a scenario where you're not so sure you want to promote telomere lengthening in your body. And that's generally in a situation of cancer.
Yeah.
So I just think in those situations, you just have to exercise extra caution. Like that's not the point right now.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
When you're dealing with cancer, you're trying to reignite the immune system. You're trying to manage growth that is not serving you in the body. You're trying to clean out the toxins. You have a lot of other work to do. You can worry about lengthening telomeres on the other side of this journey.
Yeah.
This is not the time.
Yeah. Well, since we're getting close on time, let's treat the next or the last two sections as maybe quick fire.
Okay.
See how that goes. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is just about sourcing and access because, of course, we got a ton of questions. Are bioregulators available in the U.S.?
Yes, they are. As a matter of fact, we'll have a link in the show notes. I believe Profound Health, by the time this airs, will be shipping out of the U.S.
Yay, finally.
And so finally, yeah, those poor people have been working at it for so long.
Yeah.
So we'll have links and codes for you guys, and they'll be shipping to the U.S. from the U.S. There are companies that ship from outside the U.S. in, but you know, if you can get them from within the U.S., that just makes life easier and more affordable.
Yeah. Why are many sourced internationally? So to that point.
Just for access. I think that's where people find them. They somehow think that getting them from a foreign country makes them more valid.
Yeah.
I don't know. But at the end of the day, you know, the raw materials are coming from one of two places.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to trust the manufacturer who's putting it together for you.
Yeah. Okay. Can someone get a prescription?
They're not usually prescribed. These are over the counter. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the natural bioregulator is considered a nutritional supplement.
Cool.
So you don't need a prescription.
Okay. Are the few suppliers of bioregulators created equally, meaning do you get the same exact results?
Yeah, I think, you know, this question is great and it applies to bioregulators and any other supplement.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that where you're getting them from is that they're not blowing smoke, that they're mm-hmm. trustworthy, that they're putting in the capsule what they say they're putting and
right.
not something else, that they're measuring what's in there. As a matter of fact, there's one supplier that we'll link to in the show notes, and they make some of the sprays.
Mm-hmm.
I had a meeting with them and they test every batch before mm-hmm. they produce the product and after they produce the product. And they've had to throw away entire batches because sometimes in manufacturing,
yeah,
things go sideways. And so, yeah. you know, this is why I typically promote certain manufacturers mm-hmm. over other or sources over others, because I've just spoken to them. I've gotten to know them. I trust them. And so I pass that on, but that doesn't mean there's not other good ones.
Right.
It's just, that's where those are the people that I've gotten to know myself.
All right. And then if you can believe it, there are some people that were asking about peptides or bioregulators they may have seen on Amazon. So I just made a section for this so we can make it our recommendation.
I think in general, Amazon is not a great place to get any supplements or anything you're putting into your body. I think we've all had the experience of ordering a product on Amazon and what lands on our doorstep is just, this is not even like supplements.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, a dish or an article of a household article. And what you get, the lands on your doorstep is this weird thing with a lot of writing from a foreign country on it that is substandard. That happens with supplements too.
Yikes.
And there's very little control over it. And there's been a lot written about this. There's very little control over whether you're getting the legitimate product or a knockoff. And so for that reason, as far as I'm concerned, if you're, when it comes to peptides and bioregulators, like just don't.
Or any supplement. I mean, I remember getting a supplement that the packaging looked very similar, but it wasn't the same. It's a supplement I'd been always getting. I just didn't have time to buy it from the company. Oh, I found it on Amazon and it came to my door and I was like, could this have faded or why does that label look just a little different this time? And it's never looked like that. Mm-hmm. So I think it made me a little nervous. I'm like, should I take this? I don't know if I believe what's in it. So certainly it's a risk. So don't pitch your supplement on Amazon.
I just wouldn't. It's not, you know, like, listen, and you know, there's people will say, oh, well, that's because you don't have an affiliate link. I'm like, I could have an affiliate link from Amazon. I choose not to.
Yeah.
I just won't do that.
Well, there's things like if it's a cost thing, there's things like FullScript and other kinds of places that have wonderful supplements from the source where you can get a good deal on it.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So, so let's just wrap up really quickly and then we'll do our call to action for the audience. So emerging science, what do you have to say about emerging science and bioregulators? And I think you kind of already alluded to some exciting episodes we have coming up. So,
yeah, I think there's, you know, it's interesting. The guest that I have coming on just sent me an email this morning. She's in Italy at a university where they're studying the interaction between bioregulators and stem cells, for example.
Cool.
Right?
Yeah.
So they're being studied.
Yeah.
We don't always hear about everything, but there's a lot of interest in these compounds because they've been shown to move the needle. Mm-hmm. The problem is that unless, and I don't think I would wish this, but I mean, unless a drug company with big, deep pockets took on a formal study that cost bajillions of dollars, right now what we have is the evidence that we're getting from clinicians that are working with them in practice. Mm-hmm. And that's not, yes, it's not a double-blind controlled placebo-controlled study, but you start putting enough of these anecdotes together from clinicians who are measuring the effects in their patients, and you start to be able to paint a picture of what we can expect. So the science is emerging, and I'm always looking for those people and having them on the podcast so that we can share as much of that information out as possible.
Yeah, awesome. And then what do you say to people about individualization when it comes to bioregulators?
It's like anything else.
Yeah.
You know, it's what are your goals? What are you working on? What are the issues that you're dealing with? What are the other things that you're doing to support that? Have you addressed the foundations? Like all of those factors, nothing changes. Yeah. Whether it's bioregulators, a supplement, a medication, a new lifestyle practice, it's always going to be, it always needs to be overlaid over your foundation so that you're going to get the best results and you're not wasting your money.
Yeah. Yeah. And working with qualified people, as you've said many times throughout this episode, that's so important. So all we have left to talk about for the end of this episode is just to look out on in the show notes for Nat's trusted brands. And that's not to say those are the only brands, but those are the ones that she's noted their third-party testing and just how well their product is resourced. So that's something you can look for in the show notes. And then did you want to share anything about your growing peptide community?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's more than a peptide community. I mean, this community obviously is an outgrowth of the big giant Facebook group that I had that people still message me about. What happened to the peptide group, to the Facebook group? I'm like, Facebook took it away is what happened to the Facebook group. Yeah. So I started a membership community on a platform called Circle. If you guys, and it's a great community. Like it's populated by really enthusiastic people and a lot of practitioners. So, and we bring in, like I do office, I run, hold office hours most weeks. I bring in podcast guests. We do experiments. Like in the next weeks, we're going to be, people are going to get to join and get special pricing on a Me Screen testing, deuterium level testing, and then get access to special pricing on light water, which is this deuterium depleted water. And then they're going to do post after 3 months, they're going to retest their mitochondrial function. So we do kind of fun stuff like that. So people want information about that. That link will be in the show notes. That's the membership community. Mm-hmm. And then also we have a newsletter. If people aren't quite ready to join the community, you can sign up for the newsletter. Mm-hmm. We'd love to have you.
Yeah. And then I got a couple of questions in the YouTube comment section about the book you mentioned last time. So I just put that here if you want to.
Yeah. So that was the Peptide Bioregulator Revolution. It was this little primer that you can get off the Profound Health website. And also There's peptides in the epigenetic control of aging. And it's very small, but it's a very technical book and it actually is really interesting. So if you're either a practitioner or you're one of those people that just loves to geek out on the science, mm-hmm. that's a really cool one as well.
Do we want to mention anything about how Meta is responding to the conversation around peptides and possibly bioregulators next?
Yeah. So yeah, less so on bioregulators. Like I just came through a weekend of, Instagram jail because there was a post that I had put up, maybe a year ago that the algorithm detected and decided was offside. So the environment for sharing on social media is evolving very, very fast. And it's getting really tricky out there. And sometimes I find the problem is you've got an algorithm making decisions. So it's picking mm-hmm. up on words and it's not mm-hmm. picking up on context.
Right.
And so you get people getting away with injecting themselves on Instagram, talking about how this protocol is what got me to here and you can do this too, which should be banned.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
To people, whether it's me or other, there's a couple of other doctors I know who've really suffered at the hands of the algorithm because it seems like once it puts its eye on you, you're cooked. You can't do anything right. Yeah. And they've lost their accounts. It's been really hard on people. So
even when it's education driven and there's, some level of disclaimer, they still seem to kind of wipe that out. So if you're someone who enjoys getting any kind of, peptide content from Nat, I feel like the peptide community or the newsletter is a way to go because once you're on their turf.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, the last thing I wanted to mention is we forgot to talk about this, is that I'm hosting a bioregulator and peptide summit in August.
Okay,
so if you guys are not on my newsletter list, mm-hmm. get on there because that's where I'll announce it first. And it'll be, like all these online summits, it is free if you watch it in real time.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you're always given the opportunity to buy the recordings if you don't get to watch as much as you want. Mm-hmm. There's no obligation to buy anything. But I think that I'm excited about that one because in the past, I was involved in one last fall and I didn't have full control over the guest list. Mm-hmm. This one, I have full control over the guest list. So I can promise you guys, you'll be hearing from people that you may not have heard so much from before in the past. So we'll have some new blood in there.
Awesome. And that's for anybody to attend it. You don't have to be a practitioner. Anybody.
It's an online.
That's
yeah.
Cool.
It's online.
Okay. Well, I think that's it for today. And that's probably our last follow-up solo, unless you guys can think up, 20 to 30 more questions I can sum up. We'll probably, we'll close the conversation from the follow-up from Dr. Bill Lawrence. However, we will of course probably have him on the podcast again someday. And there's some really exciting bioregulator episodes coming up very soon. So keep an eye out for those.
Thank you, Erin. Always a pleasure.
Hey folks, just a quick reminder that all of the information presented in this podcast is for information purposes only. No medical advice, no diagnosing, no treatments suggested here. Before you try anything that you hear about or learn about here, make sure that you check with your medical provider.